following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network. Welcome to the flagship edition of the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. A hard-hitting, in-depth, cutting-edge look into the world of professional wrestling. Now, let's introduce your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. This is the flagship. It is episode number 122. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody's doing well all around the world. Happy 4th of July weekend to everybody celebrating in the States. Hope you guys all stay safe. I hope you have a great time. And don't shoot anybody with fireworks. I saw a video a couple days ago of kids having Roman candle fights in Philly, and I made a comment saying that apparently, because people are like freaking out over it, so apparently none of these people grew up in the South, because in the South they used to shoot bottle rockets at each other. My wife admitted to doing it with her sister. When I lived in Tennessee, I lived here twice. I moved from Connecticut and then lived here for a year, moved back to Connecticut, and then came down, and I haven't left since. But the first time I lived here, I was walking down the street that I lived on, where I rented a house at, and as I'm walking down the street, I see bottle rockets shoot across the street. It was two guys, one standing on his side of his property, and on the other side of the street, another guy was standing, and they're both shooting bottle rockets at each other. So Roman candles are probably the safest thing to do. I'm not advising at all. I'm not saying it's safe at all, but I'm saying it's much safer than shooting bottle rockets at each other. Please don't misconstrue my words and then shoot Roman candles at each other and then somebody gets hurt and then you sue me. I'm not condoning it at all. But anyway, that's just a funny thing that I saw a couple days ago. So yeah, everybody enjoy your cookouts. Enjoy the time with your friends and family. Be safe. If you choose to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't, then you don't. It's America, where our freedoms are celebrated for now. Do what you feel is right. Social distance, whatever you need to do, but have a good time. If you drink, please do it responsibly. Please do not drink and drive. I don't care what's going on with the pandemic. Don't ever, ever drink and drive. Stay safe. Don't blow your hands off like Jason Pierre-Paul. So have a good time this weekend. I got a lot to talk about. We're going to get into the good, bad, and the ugly here in a second. I'm also going to have an epic rant about what is wrong with wrestling and wrestling fans in general today. So stay tuned to that a little bit later on. As always, we will cover the current news. Quite a bit to cover there. And Polyester will have a new imbecile of the week. Let's kick off the show the way we normally do. I'm going to tell you what I liked and what I did not like about this week's of wrestling shows on TV, with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
It's now time for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Starting off with Monday Night Raw. I don't know what category to put this in, but I feel like I should mention it. I kind of like the way it started. So it started good, but then it got kind of bad. So I'm on the fence about it. But Raw started out with a ridiculous brawl between Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Asuka. And what was supposed to be their contract signing, Samoa Joe was the moderator. And they just, that's literally, they came on the air, no intro. Just, they're all beating the crap out of each other. And Samoa Joe was trying to get some order restored. And he asked the officials to come down to break everything up. And then they got loose again and started beating the crap out of each other again. Then Dolph Ziggler, this is when it got dumb. Dolph Ziggler interrupted and made his way to the ring and then did his own introduction to bring Drew McIntyre down, and Drew came to the ring. So Ziggler grabs the microphone to question where McIntyre would be without him. Dolph promised to survive McIntyre and win the WWE title Extreme Rules. Dolph then signed his contract, and McIntyre signed his portion of it, making it official. McIntyre got the microphone to talk about the journey he's gone through to become WWE champion and promised to beat Ziggler, and he'll even allow Ziggler to pick a match stipulation. And then Asuka interrupted Ziggler before addressing Banks and Bayley. Asuka signed her contract, and then Sasha got the microphone and said she's going to win the Raw Women's title Extreme Rules, and she signed the contract, and then they just started fighting again, and McIntyre and Ziggler. Like, fuck. Who the hell schedules two contract signings at the same time? Never seen it before. So you know what? I'm gonna firmly submit this in the bad. I was gonna put it in the good column just for the way the show started and how all hell was breaking loose, but then it just got really stupid after that. So boom, bad. See, it just happened just like that. I do have two things that are good. One being this promo that I'm gonna play for you right now, is Seth Rollins addressing Rey Mysterio and his son Dominic Mysterio.
You see, Ray, we are bound by fate. And as fate would have it, I am the Monday Night Messiah. As fate would have it, Rey Mysterio, you are meant to be a sacrifice for the greater good of Monday Night Raw. And so, yes, you are correct when you say you will step foot in this ring again. And every single time that you do, I will tear you down piece by piece, Ray, until there is nothing left but a memory.
Hey, Seth, over here. But Seth Rollins, you want to ask me for forgiveness? ¿Me quieres pedir perdón for what you are going to do to me? I want to ask for forgiveness too, but not from you. Mijo, Dom, I hope you forgive me for what I have to do to Seth. For what he did to my eye, and for what he tried to do to you. I was angry at the time when you tried to fight my battles, but I understand. I love you for it. Te amo, cabrón. But I must do something to Seth that's just as remorseless as what he did to me. Seth, remember, recuérdate, an eye for an eye, ojo por ojo. And believe me, what I'm going to do to you is not by fate. Be assured, it will be by design.
I forgive you, Jefe. But I will never forgive you, Seth Rollins. Nunca. And you will never forget what my father does to you. And that will be ordained by fate.
Oh, bravo. Bravo. Strong words, Dominic. Strong words. Clearly, your father has taught you well. Many life lessons, except one. Be careful what you wish for.
I know I said last week that I really wasn't getting into this, but I actually enjoyed this segment, and I enjoyed the interaction between all three of them, so I'm going to put that in the good column. The only other thing I liked that was good on this show, which is sad because it's a three-hour show, was the match between Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo taking on Seth Rollins and Murphy. I thought it was a fantastic match. I thought all four of these worked well together. Rollins and Murphy did get the win after Carrillo got curb stomped. After the match, Murphy and Rollins attacked Black. Murphy then threw Black into the timekeeper's area. Murphy grabbed Carrillo, dragged him toward the ring steps. He was about to take his eye out like they did with Ray Ray. Carrillo fought back. Murphy nailed him with the ring steps. Rollins put a Rey Mysterio mask on Carrillo and then dragged him back to the steps. Rollins tried to blind Carrillo until Alistair made the save. And then Seth nailed Carrillo with the curb stomp onto the ring steps as Black and Murphy battled, and they went to a backstage interview after that. So this is a really good segment.
The Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
The bad, well, like I said, the beginning of the show, just the way the contract signing turned into a clusterfuck, as it normally does. The Big Show stuff, not feeling it. Big Show ended up having a handicap match, I believe. He cut a promo with Ric Flair. He's been interjecting himself into the situation with, you know, Randy Orton and Edge and Christian because he's friends with Edge and Christian. But since they're both going to be out now, Big Show is the one filling in, and as much as I love Show, I'm just not feeling it, man. And then Angel and Andrade and all of them got involved, so that set up a handicap match with Big Show against Angel Garza and Andrade, and Big Show won with a choke slam. Like, it was stupid. The match sucked. I'm not digging the Big Show involvement here. It just seems forced. It seems like they're just doing it as a filler, which they are, since Edge got hurt. And I don't know why we can't find anything else for Edge to do at this point. The lack of talent on these rosters right now is just really telling because of the pandemic. Even still in July, as I'm recording this, we still don't have all of the major big stars that are on Raw and SmackDown. So the shows are suffering for it. And man, this was the second lowest viewership in Raw history. I believe like a 1.7 million. Second lowest ratings in Raw history since 1993 when the show started. That is crazy. You know, we're looking at, what, 600 shows at this point now? Oh, Jesus. Sasha and Bayley, not digging it. We had the Viking Raiders against Andrade and Angel Garza. So Angel Garza and Andrade had double duty tonight. They had to fight them and then Big Show. Whatever, dude. More bad, the 24/7 title. The champion was Akira Tozawa with his ninjas. Took on R-Truth. Quick little match. Truth got his title back. He's like the 58-time 24/7, 48, 7-11, I-84 East, whatever the fuck it says. This show sucked. It really sucked. The Ugly. Lana. Yeah, Sasha and Bayley don't actually make the Ugly for Raw this week. They're on the bad, but they're not on the Ugly because Lana was here, and she's absolutely horrible. She approached Ruby Riott backstage and talked about Riott not having any friends, and Riott said that she isn't buying what Lana's selling, and Lana talks about how great Natty is, has been through her career, and tried to get Ruby to join their group. So apparently Lana and Natty are a group now, even though they really never even liked each other in real life. This is horrible. And apparently we're making Ruby Riott a face now, I guess, because we don't have any other women that want to come on the show, I guess. Then we had Ruby Riott against Peyton Royce with Billy Kay at ringside, and it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. That's all I really want to say about Raw. I mean, honestly, that's... moving on, before I get angry. I'm already going to get angry later on when I do my rant, but let's talk about AEW Fyter Fest. Typically a pay-per-view, but instead they're making it a two-week festivities. This week being night one and night two being next week. And then this we'll find out later on. They're going to have Fight for the Fallen right after that. The beginning of our themed TV shows, which is funny because NXT followed suit once they found out what AEW was doing. The Good. Hangman Page and Kenny Omega defending their tag team titles against the best friends, Chuck Taylor and Trent. I thought it was a really, really good match. I thought Cody and Jake Hager for the AEW TNT Championship was a really good match. I thought Hikaru Shida defending her championship against Penelope Ford was the best match of the night. Chris Jericho did a great job on commentary. Here is the bad.
on Wednesday, July 15th. That's 2 weeks from tonight, live. It will be John Moxley defending the AEW title against Brian Cage. And, you know, we don't know a lot about this scenario. I know Taz has had meetings today with Tony Khan. And so maybe Taz can update us more on that situation regarding why this match is now on the 15th and not next week. If I was Brian Cage, I would never wear a shirt.
He barely does. He puts it on for TV for some reason.
What an athletic specimen, and what a mentor, huh?
Yeah, Taz is a great fit with Brian Cage.
All right, stop the music. So the cat's out of the bag now, right? The cat's out of the bag. Everybody now knows what Brian Cage and I found out earlier today backstage, that now, July 15th, Fight for the Fallen, the Machine will get an opportunity at AEW World Champion Jon Moxley. So some might think, wow, Taz and, you know, Cage are probably pissed off about this. Nah, we're not upset over this. We're not upset that Mox bought himself some time in politics or whatever the hell he did. Nah, we're easy like Sunday morning, man. We're easy peasy, no problem. We're good. Okay, and you know, and I'm going to pull back the curtain for you a little bit. I actually had a nice, healthy conversation earlier today with Tony Khan. And it was interesting. In my conversation with Mr. Khan, you know, I learned that basically you, Mox, that you're concerned for the health and well-being of all the athletes and crew here in AEW. And I find that kind of, like, weird because, correct me if I'm wrong, Mox, but as you're at home, you've been tested at home, not once, but twice, and you've been negative on both. And if you decided to get your ass here to work next week, you would get tested again here in AEW because, John, as you know, we don't run a sloppy shop. Mox, you have a case of one thing. It's the chicken shits. You are afraid of the Machine, and you should be, son, because he will beat your brains in and take that championship from your dumbass. Fight for the Fallen, the 15th of July. Who better than Brian Cage to be AEW World Champion?
Taz got a lot of heat for saying that. I know they want to be edgy. I know they want to be cool. But the guy's wife has COVID. And to be safe, I don't care if he's negative or not. To be safe, he's staying home for 14 days, like he's instructed to, just in case. To keep you and your friends healthy, you fucking dumbass. This is not part of the rant, by the way. This is just me getting pissed off at this segment. You don't come out and say shit like that, especially when you're talking. You're taking a pot shot at WWE, saying we don't run a sloppy shop. Oh, God. If any of your people come up fucking positive at one point, you're going to eat your fucking words there, Taz. Mr. Sinercha. Because that was a low blow. And I don't think he told anybody he's going to say that. Reportedly, he had heat with Tony Khan because of that. I don't know. I wasn't there. But that's a fucking dick move, man. Renee Young has COVID. Jon Moxley is her husband. So they moved the what was supposed to be the main event of night two at Fighter Fest, Jon Moxley against Brian Cage for the AEW World Championship. They moved it to 2 weeks from now at Fight for the Fallen. Was Fight for the Fallen part of the initial plan? I don't know. But it will be in 2 weeks. And it'll be Jon Moxley taking on Brian Cage. That's a fucking really dumb thing for Taz to say. I don't know what you guys thought about it, but that's That's messed up, man. Like, Moxley's doing the right thing and staying home. You know, so he doesn't infect anybody else, possibly. He could be asymptomatic. Who knows? I'm not sure where the line is. If you're asymptomatic and you test positive, or if you get a false positive, or I don't know. I don't know how that stuff works. I probably should do more research on it. I assumed if you're a positive or asymptomatic, you wouldn't be testing positive. But yeah, so even if Moxley was tested twice and he was negative, he's still doing the right thing through CDC guidelines to self-quarantine and take care of his wife, for fuck's sake. Gives a fuck about wrestling right now. His wife is more important. That's the other thing, you dumbass. I lost a lot of respect for Peter Sinertia when he fucking said that. Also in the bad column, maybe just me being an old guy, Darby Allin, skateboarding, doing all kinds of crazy stunts, does a backflip onto his skateboard on the half pipe and lands it and skates down. That could have gone horribly wrong. I mean, look, I'm all for expressing yourself. I'm all for having fun. I think it's pretty ridiculous, some of the things he can do. But again, as I mentioned last week or the week before, I forgot what it was, AEW needs to kind of put a curb on this. Like, I know they want to get this guy over with the younger crowd, and I know that you know what they think he's doing is pretty fantastic. And, I mean, it is. I couldn't do it. But you can get very seriously hurt, and you could be very seriously injured. You got to put a curb on stuff like that, especially a guy that you're pushing and you're featuring and trying to get up into the main event scene. You got to kind of tell him, man, like, go easy on this stuff while you're under contract to us, because if you get hurt, you're screwed. We're screwed. It's just not good for anybody. Again, it's why the NFL and other sports don't allow their athletes to do, you know, other sports outside, you know, during the off season. I used the example a few weeks ago of Robert Edwards from the Patriots playing beach volleyball and blowing his knee out. Couldn't play the season. It happens. Motorcycle accidents. A lot of athletes aren't allowed to ride on motorcycles because they can get hurt. And they're not going to get paid because it didn't happen on the field. It's just not smart. The Ugly. And you guys are going to kill me for this one. Santana and Ortiz against Private Party. I know I railed on Ortiz last week for being a goofball, which he is. But I'm not blasting him for this. I'm blasting the entire match and the way it was structured. This is your typical modern day indie wrestling match. You know, whether it's AEW or MLW or Ring of Honor, it's just high spots for the sake of high spots. Nobody sells anything. There was so many freaking ridiculously like damaging moves done in this match just as a setup to the next sequence. And it just went on and on and on and on and on, and nobody fucking sold anything. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. It took me out of it. That's when I'm like, well, you know what? This is not believable. Especially when you have all the other hard-hitting stuff like Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy against MJF and Wardlow, which was a decent match. And fuck, let me just say, Wardlow, you're in the bad. You suck, dude. Like, you're horrible. You need more training. And then you got Cody and Jake Hager in a fantastic traditional wrestling match. But then you got this. And I know it's entertainment. I know there's got to be something for everybody. This wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy it. Too much going on. None of the moves that they did meant anything at all. Private Party got the win in the end, but man, I'm telling you, it was just too much for me. It's too much.
The Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
NXT on USA following suit like AEW did with Fyter Fest. NXT had their own themed event, the Great American Bash, which is not only kind of counter-programming, obviously, but Cody's dad, Dusty, invented the Great American Bash when he's in the NWA, in the Crockett territory. So for WWE to bring this back at the same night, it was kind of an asshole move. They could have used anything else, but it's timely. It's July 4th weekend. It's July 4th week. You know, it's there's probably a little bit of bullshit in there. But this is also a two-week event, night one being this past Wednesday, and then next week as well. And the final night of Fyter Fest will be the final night of the Great American Bash. I'm going to put this first match in the good, but there was a little bit of bad in it. It was for the number one contendership for the NXT Women's Championship. It was a fatal four-way elimination match. Dakota Kai versus Candice LeRae versus Mia Yim versus Tegan Nox. There was a sequence between Mia Yim and Tegan that just sucked. Like, so predictable and just waiting for the next spot, and it was kind of sloppily executed. But after that, like, the match really took off. I hate to say it, but it was after Candice and Mia Yim got eliminated. Tegan and Dakota continued to tear it up. Like, I really enjoy watching these two go at it still. And they've been feuding for quite a while. This is where the money is here. The other two are just fillers. It's all about Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai. Nox actually won the match with the Chinese Wizard, and it was really, really good. Like, the end of this match was fantastic. Timothy Thatcher against Oney Lorcan was one of the best matches I've seen all year. Very, very similar to Timothy Thatcher and Matt Riddle. And I guess maybe the common denominator here is Timothy Thatcher. This guy's a beast, man. I mean, he's an absolute catch wrestling machine, which, God, I'm going to put this in a bad column just for Mauro Ranallo. I don't know how many times he had to say the word or the phrase catch wrestling during this match, but Jesus Christ, it was like 30 times. God, I can't fucking stand that guy. He's so over the top. This match was amazing. Nothing on AEW could have topped this match. This was the best match of the week, and quite possibly the best match of the year. And Oney Lorcan is no slouch himself. I mean, these guys went at it, beat the piss out of each other with slaps in the face and chops and submission holds and some of the stuff, man. I don't know how their shoulders survive with all the arm bars and it was a crazy match. Thatcher got the win with the Fujiwara armbar, which looked fucking brutal, and then wouldn't let it go for 4 seconds as the referee counted. So eventually he did drop it, but man, it was really, really good stuff. Another good thing was a video package we had featuring Karrion Kross and Scarlett. Very dark, very scary. these two are going to do some pretty great things. Let's see. Oh, other good here. The strap match between Roderick Strong and Dexter Lumis was absolutely fantastic. These two, look, I've always thought Roddy was a great wrestler. Dexter Lumis is probably the coolest character that they got going on right now. With his whole stalker gimmick, he plays it perfectly, man. I love it. I love Dexter Lumis. He's going to be a big star. Hopefully they don't screw him over and bring him to the main roster and Vince turns him into fucking a reincarnated stalker version of Barry Windham. Lumis got to win with his submission hold. Io Shirai against Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship was phenomenal. I've been hard on Sasha and Bayley as a team because I don't like them together. I think they've been obnoxious and too over the top. But I thought Sasha and Io knocked this match out of the park. Io did get the win because Asuka interfered with the green mist and referee didn't see it. So a little bit of shenanigans going on there. The final part of the good was this promo package here between the NXT North American champion Keith Lee and the NXT champion Adam Cole.
Keith Lee had probably one of the best years of anybody. Star-making performance at Survivor Series. He took Brock Lesnar to the limit at the Royal Rumble. He went on to become the NXT North American champion. Not many people can say that they've had a better year than Keith Lee, except for me. Champ. Had I not spearheaded that movement, nobody would be talking about Keith Lee. Keith Lee on SmackDown does not happen without Adam Cole defending against Daniel Bryan. Keith Lee on Raw does not happen without Adam Cole defending against Seth Rollins. Survivor Series, you name it, I'm the one who led the charge. I'm the one responsible for any sort of success. And I will prove 1 week from tonight with the NXT Championship in one hand and the NXT North American Championship in the other, that I am the greatest champion in this brand's history.
When all the dust settles, there'll be one man standing, hoisting these championships above his head, and that man will be Keith Lee.
When the chips are down for Keith Lee, he loses. When the chips are down for Keith Lee, he fails. Me, I succeed. Me, I prevail. That's why I am the longest reigning NXT champion there has ever been. And 1 week from tonight, I am going to be the winner who takes all. And that's undisputed.
Adam Cole, while you may be undisputed, I am unstoppable.
It's my chance to deliver, and I'm not letting anyone down.
I have run roughshod on this brand, the most dominant champion in this brand's history. Nobody has held the NXT title the way that Adam Cole has.
This is the biggest match in NXT history.
This is everything that I've worked for.
Winner takes all!
Winner take all next week. Great American Bash, night two. Keith Lee and Adam Cole, baby. I think Cole's finally time for him to give it up. And Keith Lee will be the new NXT champion. And we'll put the North American Championship up, I'm sure, for a tournament or some sorts. And we'll get that to carry on to fill some TV over the next 2 or 3 weeks, if not longer. Ugly. Still Aliyah and Robert Stone. They were in a handicap match. Robert Stone was the former Robbie E from Impact, if you don't know who that is. Robert Stone and his client, Aliyah, took on former NXT champion Rhea Ripley. And Rhea beat the piss out of both of them. Look, I know it's to get Rhea over as a badass is a big deal, but you already did that. Like, she had a stupidly fantastic match where she first won her NXT Women's Championship against Shayna Baszler, and then had a fantastic match against Charlotte at WrestleMania. You don't need to get Rhea Ripley over any more than she already is. I know she lost some steam and lost some luster not being on TV for quite a while after WrestleMania. I don't know if that had to do with the pandemic possibly, but it's still Rhea Ripley and people still believe in her. But to have her take on a man and a woman in an intergender handicap match, there's no need for it. And there was comedy spots there with Aliyah getting thrown into Robert Stone's balls or whatever. Like, that's just stupid. It's not good shit. And then she got Aliyah and Stone in a double prism trap for the tap out, where Aliyah was tapping on Robert Stone's back. Nah, that sucked, man. There was no need for this at all. Finally on SmackDown, another show with record low viewership since they've joined Fox. they did 1.7 million as well. I know it's July 3rd. July 4th was celebrated, or at least observed in the States as a holiday. So most of us had the day off because July 4th is actually on a Saturday. Maybe a lot of people were out, you know, celebrating whatever. But show was not good. This show was not good at all. Here is the good. And there's not much good, trust me. But there was an Intercontinental Championship match. AJ Styles taking on Drew Gulak. Phenomenal match. Daniel Bryan was there on Zoom in a small box in the corner, kind of talking about the match. I don't know why he's home. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if Bree's ready to have her baby now, or Daniel just wants to be home until the baby's born. I don't know why he was not there for the taping. But I mean, that was just That was all right. I'm not going to really complain about that. The match itself was fantastic. AJ got the win with the phenomenal forearm. But these two killed it. I mean, Drew, you wonder why Drew Gulak got released in the first place, but I know why they brought him back. It's because he's amazing. Such a good wrestler. The other good was this promo between Matt Riddle, although his part wasn't good. I actually enjoyed Baron Corbin more. Here's Matt Riddle and Baron Corbin.
My feet allow me to feel everything else that much more.
Well, keep competing barefoot because after what you accomplished a couple of weeks ago, and I cannot wait to see what is next for Matt Riddle here on Friday night.
Uh-oh. We won't have to wait too long to answer that question, Michael Cole. We're about to be graced by royalty. What kind of family goes to Wisconsin on vacation? Last week, the tribute to The Undertaker that Matt Riddle piled on the humiliation suffered by King Corbin, and Corbin doesn't forget.
Okay, Riddle, well, if that is your real name and all, you could have come out here and you could have saved everybody a bunch of time. You could have said, the reason I don't wear shoes is because when I was a little kid, I was an idiot. And I still am to this very day.
You do you.
You do you, bro. What does that even mean? What does it mean, huh? I'll tell you what it means. It means that here on SmackDown, you better be ready for a match at any moment. And you in particular, because someone needs to teach you some respect. Someone needs to slap you around and put you in your place, new guy.
Let's go, bro.
Corbin's doing great stuff. He hasn't slowed down. He's continued to be one of their bright spots on the heel roster. Matt Riddle, though, sucks. Fucking sucks. I like watching him wrestle. His character blows. I can't stand him on the mic. They need to keep him off the mic and just keep kicking people's asses. The bad. Sasha Banks and Bayley made their own little tribute video to each other, which I didn't mind. That was kind of funny. But then they followed up with this.
Thank you, Bayley. Thank you, Sasha. Thank you, Bayley.
Goddess. Maybe Melissa sent them on their last ride.
Wow, that was really inspirational. But you know what, you guys are right. You're telling the truth. You did accomplish all those things.
And we don't want to feel left out, so we've prepared a little list of our own accomplishments.
Did you know that Nikki is not only a WWE superstar, but she is also the Queen of Scotland? And, right? And is 325th in line to the throne in England. Yeah, you fancy. No, these are real facts.
And Alexa Bliss as the epitome of a champion, and also made history as the first woman to drive and cross Antarctica in a go-kart.
I did do that. I did do that. You're the best for knowing that.
You're the best.
No, you're the best.
You're the best.
You're the best.
You're the best.
Now, you guys know how ridiculous you guys sound, right?
Yeah, right, Alexa. Did you not watch that beautiful video? Bayley, your accomplishments have brought you success. But how I got here in my journey, has been all about my heart. And I know that if I put my entire heart into this, I know I can do it. I can take that title and become the next SmackDown Women's Champion.
Oh, that was so heartfelt.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me? Oh, that's how you're going to play, huh? Well, Bailey has no problem giving you a little preview of what's to come at Extreme Rules right now. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Challenge accepted, Bailey.
I love it. It looks like we're going to have Bailey and Bliss, Corey, here on SmackDown.
Alexa and Nikki Cross, who I love together in the ring. I like their gimmick together, but it's been quite a long time they've been together. It's just surprising that nobody's turned on each other, but it was bad. It was bad. I don't know who wrote this shit. It wasn't good shit.
The Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
Other bad was the final segment. Sheamus' toast to Jeff Hardy. Sheamus wasn't even there. Sheamus was at home. Is this something where the wrestlers are pissed off because there's so many positive COVID tests? That's why they're staying home? It's possible. That's why they still have to feature them on TV. I mean, I guarantee before those positive tests came out, Sheamus was going to be there. He's been there every week since he's come back. So, I mean, I understand it, but change the fucking plans then. So instead they had Jeff Hardy, who was there, with an assortment of alcohol in the ring and a bartender there. Jesus Christ. Bartender offers up a glass of champagne to Jeff, and Sheamus wanted to toast and says, "Come on, Jeff, do it. Come on, man. Come on, don't let your fans down. This is the real Jeff I know." And Jeff's like, "Hey, what's the worst I could, what's the worst I could do?" Sheamus is like, "Yeah, that's right. That's a Jeff Hardy I know." And Jeff pretended to, pretended to drink it and then poured it on the bartender's head. Like, really? And then he grabs a bottle and cracks it over the bartender's head and then hits him with a swanton after making sure he kicked some of the glass out of the landing zone so he didn't land on it. This fucking segment sucked. You could even throw this in the ugly, too. There wasn't much ugly in the show, but there was just a lot of bad. But this was dumb. What the hell does a bartender have to do with anything? Because he's working for Sheamus? That's why you had to beat him up and attack him and break a fucking champagne bottle over his head? There you go. That's good, the bad, and the ugly for this week's wrestling shows. I do want to mention the ratings. I mentioned Raw and SmackDown both doing a 1.7. But NXT defeated AEW again head-to-head in what we kind of tongue-in-cheek call the Monday Night War, or the Wednesday Night War. Let's fucking back that up. But NXT beat AEW once again in the Wednesday Night War for the second week in a row. Wasn't as huge of a discrepancy last week, but night one of Fyter Fest did 748,000 viewers. And night one of the Great American Bash did 792,000. I'm going to get to what Chris Jericho had to say about all that when we get into the news here in a second. But NXT, that's good for them. They win 2 weeks in a row. This week, 792 to 748. That's all I got for the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's get into this week's current news in the RTW News Desk.
Here's what's going on in the world of pro wrestling in this week's RTW News Desk.
So going along with the ratings that I just mentioned, let's hear what Chris Jericho had to say about all that. Chris Jericho took to Twitter and he tweeted out, "Here's a lesson about ratings, about television ratings, kids. Last night, AEW was number 6 in the 18 to 49 demo. To TV networks and advertisers, it's the only number that matters, and we were up 31% in that area. So once again, hashtag AEW Dynamite is the real winner in the Wednesday night ratings war. So even though NXT outdrew AEW in viewership for the last 2 weeks, AEW still had the higher ratings in the coveted 18 to 49 demographic, but they just had to talk about it. Like, they don't say shit when they win, right? You don't hear any, you don't even hear anything from anybody in WWE or NXT. But you don't hear shit from AEW every week that they win until they don't. And then they got to come out and make excuses for it. Now, this week was a good show, but last week when they got fucking smoked, it was a very bad episode of Dynamite. But one of your top guys, if not the top guy, coming out and talking about this on Twitter, it's a little bit of sour grapes, man. Like, it's a little bit of, yeah, you guys may have won, but fuck you. Like, what really matters is the demographic, and we're still kicking their ass, so suck a dick. It's pretty much what Jericho said. He doesn't need to be doing that. At this point in his career, it's fucking Chris Jericho, man. It's not needed. It's not necessary. Sticking with AEW and getting back to Taz, Taz took to Twitter this week to respond to somebody. The initial tweet was at Yo Derek Gordon saying, hashtag shout out to at official Taz for exposing with class on at AEW Wrestling. At WWE wouldn't be pissed about the hashtag sloppy shop comment if it wasn't true. At Toddy D Wrestling responded, I agree to a point. Hashtag Taz might be correct, but IMO, it's an unnecessary jab to a company that saved his career after wrestling and prepared him in a career of announcing. If Taz never had the opportunity to announce, he may never have had his podcasts and other gigs over the years. Well, Taz responded to that by saying, saved my career? LMAO, no. They gave me opportunity, which I appreciated and accepted, but you need to understand that's a two-way street. I was supplying them with a need in providing my services. They did that to capitalize on money invested in me, and they needed a new, fresh voice. Taz, you know, you can't just let fans speak and say what they want, right? Why do you got to fire back? Like, who cares what some schmuck on Twitter thinks of you? He had nothing else to do. He physically could not wrestle anymore. I still think they did him a favor by putting him on commentary and keeping him around. They could have released him, but they didn't. They kept him around. So, yeah, and it afforded him the right to be a commentator on TNA Impact for many, many years. And that possibly could have led to him having his own radio show because he had the experience in speaking publicly now every week got him a job at AEW. Like, can you imagine if WWE did not make Taz a commentator and they just dumped him? Would he have his radio show? Would he have been a commentator somewhere else? I'm likely going to say no. So sorry, Taz. This dude might have been right. Regarding the sloppy shop comment that Taz made, according to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, AEW cleared Jon Moxley to compete at night 2 of Fyter Fest following a negative COVID-19 test, but Moxley made the decision to remain at home. Moxley's wife, Renee Young, tested positive for COVID-19, and though Moxley has taken multiple tests that have come up negative, he reportedly didn't want to risk infecting anyone in AEW. Isn't that what I just said? During night 1 of Fyter Fest, Taz cut the promo, which you heard as I played earlier during the Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Dave thinks the sloppy shop comment was a swipe at WWE. I can't believe I'm actually agreeing with Meltzer, but yeah, I said the same thing. Who just started testing performers following a second positive test on June 15th. Following a round of testing, multiple WWE performers tested positive for COVID-19, including Renee. That wasn't the only mention of WWE on Wednesday night's Dynamite, as MJF dropped a ratings war comment during his promo, touching on the Wednesday night battle between AEW and NXT. So good on Jon Moxley for not only staying home and taking care of his wife, but number 2, staying home and taking care of his friends and not being there. Potentially, you know, could have... Look, I don't think these tests are absolutely 100% like etched in stone, you don't have it. I think the virus is mutated. I think there's different forms of COVID-19, and I think you could have false positives or false negatives. So for Moxley staying home and potentially not infecting anybody else is the right thing to do. Can't believe I just agreed with Dave Meltzer. That's horrifying.
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
AEW announces a puppy battle royal, which was one of the cutest videos I've ever seen on Dynamite. I actually forgot to mention it. Let's just throw that retroactively back in the good category there. AEW will make history on July 8th when they deliver the match everyone has been waiting for. Not Orange Cassidy versus Chris Jericho, not Jon Moxley versus Brian Cage, but the Puppy Battle Royal. The Puppy Battle Royal will take place following night 2 of AEW Fyter Fest on TNT. Puppies for the Battle Royal have not been announced, but they put pictures of the dogs on their Twitter. Fans took to Twitter and posted pictures of their dogs saying that they want in. Cute. In all the bullshit that's going on nowadays, it's so fun to see sweet, cute puppy pictures. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Puppy Battle Royal, similar to what we see at NFL. I don't know if it's shown during the halftime shows or not, but and I forgot what it's called, like the Puppy Brawl or Puppy Bowl or some bullshit. But I always look forward to watching that every year. So this should be something very, very entertaining. The latest on Tessa Blanchard's Impact departure and reaction from the roster. Tessa Blanchard got let go by Impact, but it was a formality on Fightful Select over the past week. And this morning in the Fightful Wrestling Weekly, it was reported that Tessa Blanchard's deal and departure from Impact had a lot more than met the eye. Even last month on various Fightful podcasts, it was noted that many did not expect her at the Slammiversary show. Per the Fightful Select reports, Impact Wrestling terminated Tessa Blanchard's contract, but it was coming due anyway. Fightful Select has learned that Tessa Blanchard's contract was set to expire on June 30th, weeks before she was advertised to defend the Impact World Championship at Slammiversary in a five-way match. With her termination, she's been stripped of that title and is no longer advertised for the match. Fightful was told weeks ago that Impact asked Tessa Blanchard to film promos, but that she asked for a day rate, and the two could not come to terms to make that happen. The release had nothing to do with the controversies from January. Sure. She's not appeared on Impact taping since the COVID-19 pandemic started and has been stuck in Mexico. We've heard there is interest from other companies, but which ones were not specified to us? Well, if she's stuck in Mexico, then how the fuck is she going to wrestle for anybody else? Sorry, adding my own commentary. For those asking, there is no non-compete clause tied to the termination of Tessa Blanchard that Fightful is aware of. With her contract set to expire on June 30th, a non-compete beyond that would have been seen as an extension, and she would have had to agree to it. Coming out of the last tapings, nearly everyone on Impact Fightful spoke to didn't expect her to appear at Slammiversary. Most of the roster they had heard from thought her contract expended into July. As far as those in Impact that they spoke to, some thought that she'd get interest from AAA and WWE, but that AEW wouldn't try to bring her in despite having Tully Blanchard on the staff. Fightful has also reached out to Tessa Blanchard on the matter. In addition to this, Select reported that Blanchard has a non-disparagement clause tied to her contract, which has become standard for many promotions. Mayor Kane has made the news. Mayor Glenn Jacobs, the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee, was in the news, which is funny because, you know, Kane wore a mask for most of his career. But the Knox County Board of Health in Tennessee took a vote on Wednesday to mandate a mask ordinance for anyone inside certain buildings. The board voted 7-1 in favor of the mandate. The lone vote to not wear a mask was Glenn Jacobs. Mayor Jacobs was the only nay. As we know, Mayor Jacobs is a libertarian and he believes in the right of people to choose. It's your right to wear a mask if you feel safe. It's also the right of somebody else to not want to wear a mask because they don't want their rights infringed upon. This has been a very heated debate, a very contentious debate amongst social media and other platforms, as well as the media and the news. But this is to be expected from Mayor Jacobs because, again, he is a libertarian, and he doesn't think that it should be a mandate. Ember Moon provides an update on her injury. She told Comic Book this week. She said, "So I actually ruptured my Achilles in two places, and the surgeon thinks that I may have been wrestling on it for probably about 2 months already, torn to some extent, and I just didn't feel the pain because I have kind of a high pain tolerance." When asked about a return date in mind, she said, "It's just a very, very long process, and I would love, love, love to have a date back on the board, but it's up in the air. I'm sitting here and I'm fighting a second surgery. I'm fighting against the second surgery. That's how bad it is," she said. "When I went on backstage and I said, I don't know if I'm ever going to wrestle again, I meant what I said, and I stand by that." When asked about what she said on backstage, she said, "I was so in my feelings on backstage because I just found out about the complications like the day before. I was still very much so in my feelings about it to the point to where I cried on international television, and I'm so ashamed. But sometimes you need that outlet sometimes to say those things because people like Mark Henry, people like Booker, even the boss man, Triple H, have been checking up on me. Another person from the company that is a legend reached out and was trying to help me out with rehab options and stuff like that. Honestly, what has made the biggest difference thus far, because everything that they've said has been helping so much more than me just doing the normal situation because of that complication. So yeah, there is a light. It's getting better. I just don't have a time frame and I don't know when." As we know, Xavier Woods is having the same issue. He tore his Achilles. We're not sure when he's going to be back either. And who knows what's going on between, how he feels about the pandemic and all that. But speaking of the pandemic, there's lots of updates on WWE COVID-19 measures over the past week. WWE is getting serious about COVID-19, but it probably should have happened a long time ago. WWE took significant measures this week, but the days that preceded were a mess, as reported by Fightful Select. Upon news of numerous positive COVID tests last Thursday, several members of the roster have contacted Fightful, with one even asking how many positive tests were rumored because we would know better than them, which is pretty sad if your own talent doesn't even know. WWE wrestlers have not been informed of even an approximate number of tests, let alone who tested positive. This is a far cry from the first positive test 3 months ago in which WWE provided the name, how it was likely contracted, and an update on the individual via an internal memo. Main roster talent we've heard of are generally upset about the handling, with one saying they'd also prefer it if WWE had testing set post-tapings. Another was particularly concerned for Kayla Braxton, considering the virus has reemerged in her. There will multiple NXT wrestlers who needed to be retested after, quote, being exposed to somebody positive, but they tested negative. There was also concern and worry over a couple of small gatherings that took place among wrestlers, considering the rumor numbers are so high. We're told that it's across all kinds of departments, and despite last week's news, there were still some at the PC who were not required to come in for testing until last week. NXT PC talent were sending a message last Thursday morning after 9 a.m. saying, quote, "Per Vince, all talent are needed for TV on Friday and Saturday. Please go to the PC by 10:30 a.m. today for drive-through COVID testing. If you took tests yesterday, you don't need to today. If you're in high-level storyline, you will be off camera. Thanks. Important, after tests, you will need to remain isolated and quarantined until after the TV tapings. Many talent missed that testing deadline, and we're awaiting a new location as of 5 p.m. Eastern. Fightful had heard from several NXT and PC talent that were going to skip this week's tapings after the second COVID test, then accelerated by the numerous other tests. However, they were urged to come in even after expressing that they weren't comfortable doing so. As mentioned, friends and family will not be permitted at the tapings, but we're told that it's possible that they would be in the future. WWE underwent more testing early in the week ahead of the Great American Bash, with some wrestlers coming in very early for testing. WWE has indicated that social distancing, masks, and other measures will be mandatory moving forward, saying, quote, As a reminder, wearing masks, sanitizing, and social distancing will be required at the Performance Center this week and going forward. You will be required to wear a mask upon entering, and we ask you adhere to these requirements in order to minimize risks. Vince McMahon. There's a rumor going around that WWE is ready to return to arenas when arenas are ready for them to return. WWE Executive Vice President, Global Head of Sales and Partnerships, John Brody, made an appearance on Sports Pro Podcast when he was asked about WWE moving to the Performance Center during the pandemic and how it's changed WWE's content strategy. John went to say, if people open arenas safely, we're ready. Our chairman and CEO, Vince McMahon, has said, we're ready to go and entertain and put smiles on faces. We look forward to that next step in the transition. Brody went on to discuss the transformation of the PC from a training center to a live event arena. He continued by noting that WWE is just trying to deliver content during the pandemic. God bless Vince McMahon. Following some more COVID news, this time in AEW. AEW reportedly had untested fans in Daly's Place for night one of Fyter Fest, but they were kept away from talent and staff. According to Ryan Satin of Pro Wrestling Sheet, AEW invited Daly's Place or Jaguar sponsors to the event, and they were allowed to bring family and friends. These fans were placed in the upper bowl of the arena and likely weren't tested as they weren't close enough to the talent. Those who were seated in a lower bowl or allowed backstage were tested for COVID-19. Sources told Satin the outdoor space has a large buffer zone between tested people, lower bowl, and those who have just been given temperature checks in the upper bowl. The company felt as though this is more than adequate space to safely distance between different pockets of people. The report goes on to say that AEW is spacing people out beyond CDC guidelines for the spread so that the tested people won't be affected by the non-tested. The story of untested fans originated in a now-deleted Reddit post where a fan claimed they received a private invite to attend the show with about 60 other people who were non-crew members. It was explained that everyone entering was required to wear a mask and sign a waiver acknowledging that they hadn't been exposed to COVID-19. They were also given temperature checks. It's unknown if the masks remain on throughout the duration of the show. During the Orange Cassidy versus Chris Jericho brawl last Wednesday, fans were caught on television sitting together and not wearing face masks. AEW has been testing talent and staff throughout the pandemic and has yet to have a reported positive test. Is this the future that we're going to see? Is there anywhere that WWE can go besides the Performance Center where they can do something like this? I don't know. AEW is very fortunate that they have such a great working relationship in Jacksonville with Daly's Place. It's a really cool venue. It's an outdoor amphitheater. It's a pretty cool visual, and it's a pretty large place. Can WWE find some kind of outdoor stadium like that? Are they going to try? I don't know. We were told earlier in the year, just due to cost-saving measures and the fact that NXT, for example, still had a contract with Full Sail University that they weren't going to go on the road, doesn't mean that Raw and SmackDown can't. Could we see Raw and SmackDown follow suit and try to find a smaller outdoor amphitheater to wrestle in? It's possible. Would they want to do that out of fear of like being seen as them copying AEW? I don't think they care about anything like that. Is this smart for AEW? I said pre-WrestleMania this year that if they still wanted to go to Raymond James Stadium, if the owners of the stadium would allow it, for Vince to have spread people out and have them sign a waiver that have people sign a waiver that should somebody get sick, they can't sue anybody or hold WWE liable or anybody at Raymond James liable. They could have done that, right? So AEW is doing it now, having people spread out in the upper bowl so they don't interfere with anybody else that's there. And it gives more people in the crowd. Is this the beginning of what we're going to see of fans returning to wrestling? It's quite possible. We'll see if WWE follows suit. WWE filed a late renewal on the trademark Cody Rhodes. And also trademark for the man was abandoned, which is funny. So maybe Cody will be a dick and just try to trademark the man instead for himself since Becky's gone and apparently Rick doesn't want it, I guess. WWE has filed to trademark Cody Rhodes after the trademark lapsed on April 13th. Cody filed to trademark the name that WWE's trademark had lapsed, but WWE had filed a late renewal, claiming that their filing and payment was delayed due to COVID-19. The late renewal was filed on May 15th. Cody's application received an initial refusal due to the similarity with WWE's registration. Cody has 6 months from June 30th to respond to the likelihood of confusion letter sent by the U.S. Post Office or the U.S. PTO, or else his trademark would be abandoned. WWE previously filed to oppose the trademarks to Slamboree and The Match Beyond, which were filed by Cody. In other trademark news, the United States Patent and Trademark Office has abandoned WWE's trademark for The Man, as they did not receive a response to the previous office action from within the six-month response period. As you know, WWE filed for the trademark of The Man in December 2019 to continue for use to Becky Lynch, but Ric Flair already filed for the trademark in August 2019. In May 2020, Flair reportedly agreed to sell the trademark to WWE. Flair had signed a new deal with WWE earlier this year, but I guess nobody owns the copyright right now for The Man. But is that petty on WWE's side for not giving Cody Rhodes a name? I mean, WWE created the name Cody Rhodes. I mean, Rhodes is not Cody's legal last name. It's Runnels. So if WWE trademarked Cody Rhodes, that's on Cody and Dusty for not paying attention or for allowing it to happen to begin with, because they never thought they would part ways, I suppose. So is that really petty on WWE's part? Maybe. Maybe a little bit. But if they created the name and they want to keep getting revenue and royalties from their, you know, their footage that he was on, hey, man, that's business. That's their right to do it. Finally, WWE has reportedly acquired Evolve Wrestling. According to Mike Johnson at the PW Insider, Mike reports that WWE has officially acquired ownership of Evolve, even though we knew they had a working partnership together. The deal was finalized recently after several months of negotiations. It was not indicated if talent currently under an Evolve contract will transfer to WWE as part of the deal. It was reported on June 16th that Evolve Vice President Gabe Sapolsky posted a Facebook message alerting talent that Evolve had no plans to run events moving forward. There were unconfirmed reports that Evolve had sold its tape library and possibly more to WWE. Both WWE and Evolve had neither confirmed nor denied those reports. Those sources told PW Torch at that time that the rumors of WWE buying Evolve and WWN, Evolve's parent company, ceasing to exist were not true. WWE and Evolve have had a working relationship for the past few years, with WWE NXT talent appearing on Evolve shows and Evolve 10th anniversary airing on the WWE Network. The Evolve tape library includes matches featuring the likes of Johnny Gargano, Keith Lee, Walter, Matt Riddle, Drew McIntyre, Drew Gulak, and outside WWE talent such as Darby Allin, The Young Bucks, Zack Sabre Jr., and more. Pretty funny if they're going to use that stuff on their own network, and there's nothing that they could do about it. Evolve took a major financial hit with the COVID-19 pandemic canceling WrestleMania week, leading to WWE and Evolve opening up discussions of an acquisition. Funny, those silly WWE guys just swooping in on those poor guys losing all their money and just saying, we'll take care of you. We'll take this burden off you. It's typical WWE. WWE did not acquire WWN Live in the deal. Owner Sal Hamoai will focus on other properties under the WWN Live banner.
The Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
That wraps up the current news for this week. Let's get into Polyester the Evil Taylor and find out who this week's imbecile of the week is.
It's time for everybody's favorite segment.
If you guys don't know how to use a seatbelt, just ring your call button and Tommy will come back there and hit you on the head with a tack hammer.
You know, Lloyd,
just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber.
Here's Polyester, the evil tailor, with the imbecile of the week.
Some people are really stupid.
Good evening to each and every one of you imbeciles out there. Welcome back to your favorite segment of the Ninja Turtle Podcast, the imbecile of the week, hosted by, well, me, Polyester, the evil tailor. Remember the late 90s, early 2000s, when wrestling was basically at its peak? Everybody was watching. Everybody was interested. It was the hottest thing to watch. It was great TV. It was actual must-watch television. And there was a lot of reasons why. Good storylines, great characters, payoffs, sexy attractive women, specifically sexy attractive women that were proud of their bodies and were not afraid to show it. Now we're in 2020. No storylines, or at least the ones that they do are just terrible. Characters are basically all in the same lame ass promos, and basically everybody wrestles exactly the same way. Just sequence wrestling, illogical, and women decided that they want to go ahead and try to do that type of stuff. And you know, I guess to each his own, go for it. If you think you can do it and you think it looks good, fine, whatever. But they went away from what actually drew. And if you remember in the late 90s, I mean, I was not necessarily a big fan of Sable, but Sable was probably the number two talent in WWF. Did she wrestle? No, not really. I mean, she had a couple of matches, but the only reason she was on the program was because of the way she looked and the way she dressed. She was a draw. She did Playboy. Then enters bra and panty matches. And I mean, after a while they got old. I mean, big deal would be, but the bra and panty match when they first came out were, well, for young men, it was an attraction. It was something that we wanted to watch, especially if the particular female in mind was attractive. Now you have people like, I don't know, Alexa Bliss, saying that she would never demean herself or something to that matter and ever participate in a bra and panties matches. I mean, granted, the shorts she wears are extremely tight on her ass and at times only cover half her ass. And don't get me wrong, it's very nice ass. But the hypocrisy of Alexa Bliss saying that she would never do such things, and she wears shorts like that. Most of her outfits show a lot of cleavage, which, you know, Polly's a big fan of as well. And then, you know, on her Instagram, she takes pictures of herself in bikini tops and bikinis overall. And what the hell is the difference between a bra and panties and a bikini? I mean, obviously there's different styles, but they cover the same thing. They show the same amount of whatever it is that you want to show. I mean, she has no problem showing herself in a bikini, but she cries, I never, as far as a bra and panties match. So the hypocrisy is pretty strong on this. I think it's imbecilic for her to say something like that and basically demean the women that came ahead of her that, whether she likes it or not, paved the way for people like herself to earn a living. So because of that, Ryan Satin, you will be this week's imbecile of the week for liking that message and me responding to that message and said, yeah, you would like something like this at Ryan Satin. And then I got blocked for my troubles. And that'll do it for this week, you imbeciles. Give me a follow on Twitter at @ThePolly_Ester. That's @ThePolly_Ester on Twitter. And tune in again next week. Who knows, maybe you'll be the imbecile of the week.
Hey, I got no arguments there. Ryan Satin's a douchebag, man. I think we could all agree on that. I think that was very well done, Polly. Let's get into my rant. I know I teased it in the beginning of the show, but I saw some tweets this morning that kind of bothered me. Apparently, there was somebody that was responding to a Sean Spears tweet. Sean Spears obviously is in AEW now. Sean Spears had tweeted out, "Damn it, ref, put me over, hashtag AEW dark." At Mitchell Hallbreich had responded to him, saying 13 wins and 14 losses is not much to promote. Well, Sean Spears responded to that and said, "Thanks for following my career so closely, Mitchie. And from what I can see, your record of 0 versus 246 versus carbohydrates still reigns supreme. So you and both of your chins can go eat poop emoji. Hashtag JK kissy face." Oh, you would not believe the amount of people that responded to that and said, "Oh God, Sean Spears is body shaming. And how can you go out and say things that are, you know, it's one thing to be a heel, but it's another thing to say things that could trigger people's anxiety." And oh, Jesus Christ. Look, I had to chime in. I tweeted, "For crying out loud, wrestling fans, don't be snowflakes. It's a work. It's a predetermined form of entertainment. They aren't real wins and losses." Sean's response was him being a heel. He's a heel, motherfucker. I know that a lot of that is lost in today's product, where kayfabe has been dead for many years. I responded to say, "But he and MJF are trying to do what bad guys have been doing since the inception of the sport. Can you imagine the things Heenan, Piper, Orndorff, or any of the heels would have said to you in the 80s if they had Twitter? You guys need to stop taking it seriously and grow up." My final tweet was, "If people seriously take what wrestlers say is trying to be mean, trigger, shame someone online, think about this. They are, quote, working you. They are doing their job, trying to get you to hate them so you'll pay your cash to see them, quote, get beat by the good guy. It's pro wrestling. For crying out loud. The freaking millennials today, man. I swear to God. Wrestlers can't say shit on social media now out of fear of triggering somebody's anxiety. Are you fucking kidding me? Have you not seen MJF's Twitter? It's clear, no matter what he does, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or podcasts or anywhere he goes or says or does publicly, he's in character. You fucking morons. If you seriously get triggered by something a wrestling heel says on Twitter, like you think he's actually serious about it, stay off of fucking Twitter. Simple. Don't put yourself in that position. And don't respond to these guys, or don't talk shit about these guys in which they're going to have a response to you. Are there some wrestlers? I'm not saying this is just, you know, the same for everybody. There are some assholes in wrestling that actually do get butt hurt, like Nyla Rose, and will respond to you. There are actually wrestlers that will get butt hurt, like Nia Jax, and will respond to you. But for crying out loud, it was clear in his snarky, sarcastic tone that Sean Spears was just being a heel. Just like MJF. You guys shouldn't take this so seriously. Kayfabe is dead. Don't get me wrong. It's been dead for a long time. You can blame Vince McMahon for that, for calling it sports entertainment in the fucking 80s. 35, 40 years ago. You have heels going on social media, you know, taking pictures with other people that are supposed to be in a war with. Or heels going on social media and taking selfies with their wives and kids and families and all that. Which is fine. That's their right. But when you got guys like Sean Spears and MJF and Sami Callihan and people like that being heels on social media, keeping in kayfabe, God bless them, man, because nobody else is doing it. So you guys need to chill out. All you fucking people getting triggered by stuff, just stay off of social media then, because it's definitely not the place for you. Why do you think so many people delete their Twitter accounts? Because they can't handle it. Look, it's professional wrestling. Don't take it seriously. And for guys to go on there and say, oh, 13 wins and 14 losses isn't much to promote, you're a fucking moron. It's a predetermined outcome. It's not a real win a lot. Do you really think that these guys go out there and have shoot wrestling matches and they earn their wins, or they, you know, the other person beats them and they get a loss? It's fucking decided by whoever has the pen, whoever's creating the storylines, whoever's booking the territory. It's not fucking real. So Sean responded as a heel, as the way he should, as the way a heel should respond to people if he wants to protect his character, because that's what wrestling is all about. It's creating tension. It's getting you to hate him so you'll pay your hard-earned money when we go back to watching shows again, and you boo him, and you root against him, and you want the other guy to win. That's psychology. That's fucking pro wrestling. And for you fucking SJW snowflakes that go on Twitter and say, oh, you're body shaming, I can't believe you said that, you're going to trigger somebody's anxiety, shut the fuck up. Seriously. Grow up. That's why we have so many fucking entitled people nowadays. That's why you can't go anywhere and say anything anymore. Sean Spears was being a heel. Get over it, man. It's absolutely ridiculous that you're going to give him shit because you think he was body shaming somebody and they're going to be triggered. Well, if they're so prone to being triggered, then like I said, get the fuck off of social media. Because obviously you're not a fucking adult and you can't handle any criticism at all. Or even take a joke. Stay off of social media then. Don't put yourself in that position to where you can get triggered. It's that simple. Fucking millennials and SJWs nowadays, man. I just, God, apparently I'm too old and everything's passing me by. I feel like my old man. I feel like my dad, you know, shit, when I was younger and probably saying the same stuff to him. I don't even know, man. Like, this social media can be very, very toxic to begin with, but it's also a great platform to promote your stuff, promote your business, you know, make new friends. But if you're going to go on there and say something like that to a wrestler, like 13 wins and 14 losses isn't much to promote, don't respond to him. If you're in any risk of getting triggered at all, don't be a fucking smartass and say something like that to Sean Spears. It's simple. Like, he's not going to respond. Nobody says shit about the kid talking smack to him, saying 13 wins and 14 losses isn't much to promote. No one said shit about that, right? Some people came to Sean's defense. At Rob Leeds 5, and I'll close with this here. Imagine being a wrestler and getting butthurt over facts. I bet AEW wrestling wishes it'd get his money back as it weighs. Sorry. Somebody else had responded to what Sean had tweeted about saying, come on, ref, put me over. At Rob Leeds 5 said, imagine being a wrestler and getting butthurt over facts. I bet AEW wrestling wishes it get his money back as a wasted signing you. Ask for your release. Maybe you can trick Impact Wrestling into giving you a contract thinking that you'll get over. Jesus Christ. Sean wasn't even serious about the fucking tweet to begin with. He was tweeting in character. Damn it, ref, put me over. Hashtag AEW dark. These fucking assholes take this shit seriously. In response to that moron's tweet I just read, at R. Dankoff said, totally unnecessary tweet from a miserable schmuck. Sean's got a lot of talent and has been steadily growing his character since Dynamite began. He will be the leader of the next Horseman squad. At Rob Leeds 5 responded, said, I don't think he can be taken seriously anymore to be considered as a leader, especially after having Tully's picture on Boxers. I thought AEW was supposed to give their talent creator freedom. I don't know why he would agree or thought that that would be a good idea. Oh, wrestling fans, I swear to God, you make it so hard sometimes. Or easy, really, depending on... You know, I'm following Sean Spears just because of all this. I've been kind of hard on him. I didn't think he was that great in WWE, and I thought, you know, them touting him as a major deal when he signed with AEW, when they haven't really... and maybe it's not his fault. They haven't even used Sean Spears that well. They haven't booked him as a top guy, but just based on this interaction, Sean Spears, you earned yourself a follow, my friend. Well done. Go follow him on Twitter at Perfect, P-E-R-F-E-C, 10N, at Perfection. oh, God, wrestling fans, I'm telling you. That wraps up for the show this week, guys. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon, and check out my YouTube gaming channel called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Leave us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling, and check out our company's Twitter page at RRPodNetwork. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend here in the States and everybody else around the world that's not celebrating. I hope you still have a fantastic weekend as well. Thank you for all your support. I'll be right back here on Tuesday with another edition of RTW Rewind. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to the flagship edition of the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Please follow RTW on Twitter at Red Turtles Pod. You can also send us an email at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We'd like to thank you for all your support. You've been listening to the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.